Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to this edition of the Sixers Talk podcast brought to you by Wilmington University, WilmU Works. Today I am joined by Amy Fadul, who's filling in for Danny Pommels. Amy, it's very wonderful to see you. Very wonderful to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff today. Clearly the NBA world was shaken by the tragic and sudden loss of Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna. So, you know, we're definitely going to touch on that. It's going to be something we're definitely, you know, we were at practice today when some of the players spoke, when Brett Brown spoke, Elton Brand. So we're definitely going to get into that. But first we wanted to, you know, start by talking Sixers and just talk about the state of the team right now. And, you know, they're going to have to play a basketball game on Tuesday. You know, it's going to be tough, but, there's going to be a lot of emotion in the building. But, you know, they got to play a basketball game. It's tough. Coming off, obviously, a huge win against the Lakers. LeBron in the building, you know, gets the third, you know, passes Kobe Bryant all time for the all-time scoring list. Ben Simmons plays just out of his mind, plays excellent. Tobias Harris. Amy, what was your biggest kind of takeaway, you know, from that game and just kind of, you know, the last couple games where, you know, Ben Simmons is really, maybe take out that Toronto game, really finding something here.
Yeah, I mean, leading up to some of these games, you were wondering if he could play start to finish the way that you saw him start games. You know, everybody's been talking about, well, out of the gates, 11, 12, 14, 15 points by the half, and then so zero shots in the fourth quarter, one shot, four shots, and that kind of, whether it's an effort level, whether it's a desire level, whether it's just not feeling as into it, you didn't have that problem the last four games.
Sure haven't.
It was absolutely start to finish, a quality defensive effort, which we know we're always going to get from him, but a quality offensive effort. And that's not something you usually see sometimes with him. He does have a tendency to be more of a extra pass friendly in the fourth quarter. And that is a little bit, you know, you and I've talked about it. You know, if he gets to the line a bunch and if he facilitates nine assists or something, it's masked a little bit.
Sure.
But to me, I still want you to take more than two shots in the fourth quarter.
Also fair.
Game's on the line. You find yourselves down. The lead has gotten away from you. I need you to step up and be assertive. And I don't know if that's been a point of extra contention from Brett Brown or the coaching staff. Brett Brown has said, and multiple times, I know you've heard this, he's calling more plays.
Mm-hmm.
He's calling more plays for Ben Simmons, for Tobias Harris to get things going. And when they had Josh Richardson go down, that was a real wrench in their offensive plan because you already are missing Joel Embiid, right? So there's an important cog in your entire offensive scheme. And then you have a guy like Josh Richardson, who is a person that can create their own shot, and he's gone, and you're thinking, okay, who do we got?
All right, Who's shake, left? Let's go.
So really, you know, it puts a damper on things. But Ben Simmons has taken it upon himself the last couple of games, and the Lakers game, and yes, they get up for these games, and it was at home. But it was amazing. That was as good as the Toronto game was at times, and as good as like the other games have been for him, and you've seen sparks, forget about it.
No, when you think of the level of competition, like obviously against the Nets, he has that insane game.
Yeah, now
34-12, 12-5.
That was his best game.
Right.
And then he was like, just wait.
Yeah, because like when you get, again, given the opponent and given the circumstances on that Saturday night against the Lakers, I mean, that was, when you factoring, he's starting with all due respect to Matisse Thybulle, a rookie who is a very impressive rookie nonetheless.
Right.
And Shake Milton in the starting lineup.
Shake Milton.
Who actually, hey.
He was good.
He was pretty good,
but if you
actually
took a poll of the fans in the stands about, one, who Shake Milton was, or two, where he came from, They would not be able to tell.
No, probably not.
And
hey,
that's okay.
He's a hell of a player at SMU.
They certainly started Googling his name by halftime. Yes.
I saw Tom Havershow put out, he said, is it too late to start throwing Shake Milton in the MVP conversation?
You never
it's,
know.
It's, hey, never too late. We're only halfway through this thing. It totally could. But just getting back to, you mentioned Ben's defense, and talking about Matisse Thybulle. Oh, my God.
He's a revelation.
It's incredible.
He's a revelation.
As a rookie, in my experience, I've never seen a rookie be this impactful defensively. I've never seen it.
It's just not something you see for a myriad of reasons. You know, we all know defense is seemingly optional at times in the NBA. We've all seen the players make those business decisions. His business decision is absolutely to step in, get the steal, take the charge, come up with a block, and just be basically disruptive. And you don't see it from college players that are making the jump to the pros because defense is, let's face it, unless you're like UVA, it's not a real defensive mindset. It's
sure.
about getting to the next level, and what everybody thinks is getting to the next level is shooting and scoring, which is a completely viable way, and that is what you've learned. And it's understandable, but it's nice to see there are players that realize, listen, I'm not going to be your 25-point scorer. How can I make my mark? And they've welcomed the defensive effort. And for a guy like Matisse Thybulle, who is excellent defense, and it seems funny now to think about, you and I were here talking about him after getting drafted, and they're like, well, maybe his 70 steal, like those numbers were just, they were a product of that man or the zone defense. That's hilarious to think about.
He's a defensive guy.
He loves this kind of stuff. And Brett Brown loves that he loves it.
Yes, he does. And it's not just, the deflections and the blocks. That's all great. It's fun. He got one on LeBron on the first possession that LeBron was on. But he can just D people up, too. Like, you see him handle, his first game, he's guarding Kemba freaking Walker and doing a good job.
He's disruptive.
It's amazing.
For these guys now, and it's great when, that these end-of-game scenarios where you have Matisse Thybulle and Ben Simmons out there, the length that they show, these 7'4 wingspans and these things that are over 7 feet, it's just disruptive. And to the eye, talking with guys like Jim Lineham and Mark Jackson, to the eye, you get the ball and you look up and you're like, all you see are arms.
Yeah.
There's nowhere for you to go. And you try to go over, you try to go under, and he is just so rangy and lengthy when you think about his defensive, and he just has that mindset. It's real fun to watch. I mean, I love watching it. The old adage of defense wins championships. I don't know if he's going to lead the Sixers to a championship.
Where's Danny? Sorry.
But like,
where's Danny at?
It's so much fun.
Because me and Danny got into a big thing about defense on our last podcast, and I said I feel like I'm on a crusade for defense. Because I want them to go into the playoffs and win games like 95-90.
Honestly, you see those games. That's what you see
Let's
in the playoffs.
I'm
you
excited
see that.
For that.
You don't see 135-132. Right. You don't see that in
no.
the playoffs.
And it's to your point about Matisse too. Just talking about you need a team needs different kinds of guys. You can't have not everybody can score 20 points a game. Just not the way it works. And he told stories it was interesting. I think it was maybe right after the blue and white scrimmage in Delaware when he was. That was my first eye popping of, holy crap, this kid's going to be a stud. Because I think at least 10 steals in that game. I'm not exaggerating. 10 steals in that game.
See it.
And he spoke afterwards and he said that, like the question was, why defense? What is it about you and just that focus on the defensive end and that? And he said, because honestly, when I was younger, because he played basketball a little late. He's got a really interesting backstory where he lived in Australia for 7 years, I think, and then moved back to the States. And he didn't play basketball, I think, till like junior high, maybe. But his offensive game, his defense was always ahead of his offense just because of that. And, his dad told him, you can't control offense. You can control defense. You can control effort. So do that. Work hard on that end. Yeah. And that's how he got
Make
on
that
the floor.
Your calling card.
Exactly. And he's... Oof,
He's
Boy,
fun
has
to watch,
he ever.
Fun to watch.
He's got to be, you would think, he's definitely going to make some form of all-rookie team. Can he make the all-defense, one of the all-defensive teams?
You got to wonder, a second team all-defense? These are elite defenders, and they are across the board. There's some, obviously Ben Simmons is a first team all-defensive
player. Got to be. Throw out the awards if he's not.
Exactly. And then you have all the big men that rack up your blocks and things like that. So they're going to really take up a good chunk of it. But I would think you should be able to find a spot. If he continues at this current pace,
yes,
that you would be able to find a spot for him, at least on the second team all defense. I would be surprised if you couldn't, if he continues at the same pace.
Yeah, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's only like five guys ever who made it as rookies, and they were all second teamers. It was like Tim Duncan.
And it's a lot of it. It's like they just, we're not going to get it. Tim Duncan could have been all defense.
Right.
But they're like,
right,
you're a rookie, so we're not going to put you in there.
Exactly.
You got to earn it. Even though they did earn it, yeah,
right. But that's, and then, you know, that's going to be like one of those dumb things that it's going to be, but it's not a dumb thing in the grand scheme of things. Right now, he gets called for a ton of fouls. He makes all defensive second team next year. He's got a rep. Maybe those fouls come down a little.
It's frustrating to watch, and I know it's frustrating for him because you know that you don't want to believe that you get calls because of who you are. But anybody that 100%. Watches an NBA game knows that that's not. You absolutely do get calls. And Ben Simmons is finally starting to actually get some calls to go his way. We all remember, you know, his rookie year, he didn't get anything going his way. And so Matisse Thybulle's experiencing that, and you can feel it. There's definitely some. There was one the other day, and I was like, that's a okay.
Well, there's the Kyle Lowry one in Toronto where he had his arms side, and Kyle Lowry just said,
the Raptors are a terrible matchup because that's their cup of tea. They make teams turn the ball over against them.
Yes.
They take more charges between Kyle Lowry and Pascal Siakam. They are just drawing charge after charge, and they start barking at the refs, and they get the calls.
They work. Let me tell you something.
They work.
Nick Nurse is a damn good coach, but, man, he talks to officials an awful lot.
And listen, if it works, you can't.
That's true. You can't knock it. If it's
exactly
giving his team an advantage,
it's
whatever you got to do.
But it still works.
Whatever you got to do. So – speaking of, you know, awards and accolades, you know, Joel Embiid going to be an all-star starter,
third straight
season. Mm-hmm. First of all, your just honest take, do you think, should Ben Simmons be an all-star?
I do. I think he should be an all-star. I think that his, you know, the knock on him, it was a little bit troubling to look and see how the voting went, but it didn't. Because I thought he was low for the fan vote. I thought
incredibly
eighth in fan vote was
a
little ridiculous. And I get that, you know, he doesn't have the style of game where he's, you know, shooting threes like crazy. But he has great dunks, and he's a great driver. And I just thought, well, if I'm watching basketball, that's what I like to see as well. I don't need a guy just chucking up three-pointers. But fine, whatever. If they want to dislike him or discredit him because of the lack of jump shot, fine. But the media and the coaches' vote told me a little bit more about what people see in him. And I always go back to what Jimmy Lynam says. And Jim Lynam is just like, this guy, I don't care how the bucket goes in. It always goes in when he shoots it because he shoots where he's comfortable. If the guy's getting you 7 of 8 and he's got 25, like, how do you care how it got there?
Yeah.
So I understand that there had been some knocks on him, rightfully so, in some of the effort levels of the second half, and maybe it's because he's being keyed on more in a double team or he's looking to pass first and second. But to me, he is such a unique skill set, and he is such an impressive athlete and player, and the things that he does, no one can do. When you watch him all of a sudden and a player is bringing the ball down and he thinks he's got a fresh breakaway and then here comes the freight train rolling in that just had his shot. Like, you're like, how did Ben Simmons get there? He's 6'10". He should not be able to move the way he does. I think, if he's not an all-star, something's gone wrong.
I completely agree with that. And you're talking about Ben and LeBron, like that unique skill set. That's watching that game.
Oh.
That's – he's like the only – like from a physical – ability standpoint, it's like him, Giannis, and like LeBron
are
like a category of their own as far as like what they can do. And Brett Brown said that, and it's funny because Al Horford and Brett Brown said the same thing when they asked about. So I think it was the Friday before the game. Mm-hmm. Brett Brown was asked about how you slow down LeBron.
He said one on one.
Yeah, so he said you can't one on one. He said if he's coming straight at you, good luck.
Yeah,
and it was Al Horford literally was asked about Ben and said,
Same thing. If he's coming straight at you,
good luck. Because that's how it is with those guys. Because the only thing that's going to stop those guys is themselves. Like, if they miss. Like,
if
really.
If they miss, you know, something fluky happens.
Sure.
But I just think that, you know, it would be a shame if he does not make the All-Star team. He is definitely one of the top players in the league. You know, the All-Star voting, I thought it went how it was going to. I thought Pascal Siakam was a very deserving player.
Absolutely.
He's had a great season so far. I think it'll continue to kind of play out the way it should. It was just surprising that Ben was lower on the fan vote.
Well, it's funny because I think he was 8 and Beal was 9. And to me, like, that, might be my starters.
Yeah, I mean, and Bradley Beal has the unfortunate problem of playing for the Wizards.
Yeah, but Trae Young plays for the worst team in the NBA.
Yeah, at least you see highlights of him.
I guess.
And I think Atlanta is a little bit more interested in their Hawks, even though the Hawks are terrible. I mean, the Wizards, there are no such thing as Wizards fans. DC has like the worst fan base. Terrible fan base. I say that because I used to live there and I know all their fans and they don't care. They don't go to Caps games. They don't go to Nationals games. They don't go to Wizards games. The Capitals won the Stanley Cup a couple years ago, and they still couldn't sell out.
Yeah. No, it's Nationals. These are fair takes.
Hey, we won the division. Look at us. You're playing the Phillies. Half your stadium is Phillies fans.
It's true, even when the Phillies weren't good.
So I mean, I'm glad you won the World Series. I'm glad you have a Stanley Cup, but you can't fill the seats. Bothers me.
Getting back to Ben, though.
You want to hear more about the DC fan base?
Yeah, hey. Please continue. So what I'm most curious about is Joel Embiid seems like he is very close to a return.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So we were at practice the other day, and he says, all right, this was last week, and he says, all right, next week, you know, I hopefully could come back in a week. And that was when everybody was like, three weeks. And then we were at practice today, and they said, listen, he's listed as questionable. Well, that is definitely an upgrade, and he's going to go see the hand surgeon, and he's going to be reevaluated before the game on Tuesday. I mean, this could be sooner rather than later. I was always under the mindset, and that's just my own thing. I didn't know anything. I thought, well, they're just going to hold him out until after the All-Star break just to be cautious. But Joel Embiid, and you'll remember this when he spoke last week, every question he answered with, we're the sixth spot, we're in sixth, well, I don't want to be in sixth, I don't like being in sixth, we can't let this get away, sixth is bad, sixth. And he mentioned where they were in the standings at least five times. And I was like, well, he is well aware that this could be slipping away as far as them wanting to get up to that two seed. Now, it's very close. Two through six is only like 2 to 3 games separating those spots, but he's aware of it. And that, to me, says a lot.
Yeah, it's very motivated, just the way he is speaking. And like, you know, the popular refrain around here is he got a lot of crap last year because he played in the All-Star game, then was out with the knee tendonitis, so that didn't sit too well with a lot of people. So, you know, he was asked and he said, I don't really care about the All-Star game. I want to get back.
We're in sixth place.
Exactly. That's it. We're in sixth in the East. I'm more concerned about that. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
All right, Joe. But when it's just such a tough thing with those two because they're so uniquely talented, but their skill sets overlap, but then also are completely opposite at the same time.
Yeah, the Venn diagram of where they should go ahead and meet is a very small gap. And it's so interesting because they're both, you know, transcendent talents.
Absolutely.
In their own right. And you're wondering how can they figure out a way. And that's the big question. It's been the big question for years now, and it will continue to be the big question. Can these two play together because they are a non-traditional point guard and a more of a current NBA center, which doesn't necessarily always play under the basket.
I would say non-traditional as well would be a fair non-traditional center.
You know what I mean?
Center,
so it's like he wants to go further away from the basket, and he almost has to because his point guard wants to go underneath the basket. So it's always going to be a walk on that line. It's just so much fun when they're out there together because you get to see glimpses of how it could be. It's sad that you don't get to see it that much because of, you know, injuries right now.
Yeah, and again, going back to defense, with those two on the floor defensively,
ridiculous.
My goodness. You have that guy protecting, you have Joe protecting the rim, Ben on the perimeter hounding people. Like, they're gonna grind out so many playoff wins. And like, if you like defense, it's gonna be fun. If you don't like defense, you might not like it as much. But as a guy
it's
who
be great.
Very much loves defense,
I just don't want them to play the Raptors.
I'm in. No, that wouldn't be good. That wouldn't be good. Just, like, it is a bad matchup for all the reasons you mentioned. But then also that Marc Gasol fella.
He is a problem.
Tends to give Joel Embiid some problems. So that's also
like the only one.
Not great. When you look at the All-Star voting too, though, because you mentioned that. How do we feel about the players' vote? And because, I mean, we got, let's see who got votes here for the Sixers. Mariel Shayok, who is a two-way player. Norvell Pell, who's also a two-way player.
Listen, I would have probably given him, like, if I had an extra vote, I might throw one Norvell Pell's way.
We got Shake Milton, Trey Burke, Matisse Thybulle, and, of course, Furkan Korkmaz, all getting votes.
Yeah, I mean, you saw, I can't fault that because then when you see also on the big list for the East and you saw the fan vote for a certain guy up in Boston, and you're thinking, I get that they love Taco Fall, but
yeah,
I mean,
it's just
like
silly.
Top five in voting.
Yes.
And I thought, Ben Simmons can't get in the, he's number eight. And Taco Fall, who plays like, he's played 10 more minutes than I have in the NBA. He got that many votes. But I mean, I don't know. You just wonder, it's a flawed process. They're trying to work through it. You know, they used to put so much stock in the fan vote, and then they realized maybe that's not ideal. Then they put too much stock in the coach vote, and so then they realized that. So they're trying to get kind of the happy little equation there. It's tough because some players, it's just like in the AP college voting. You talk to a couple of high-level college coaches, whether it's college basketball or college football, they don't vote in those things. They just pass it off to some assistant.
Right.
So it just, how serious do you take it if you're voting for Shayok?
I think some of the players probably voted for themselves.
Mariel Shayok voted for himself? Like your class election.
Yeah, there were years Deion Waiters got like votes, and I was like, it was one vote.
Well, maybe Deion.
That was clearly Deion Waiters voted for himself.
I don't put it past any of these guys.
I don't know. Knowing their personalities. I don't know.
I'm interested now. Now I'm going to ask Mariel Shayok if he voted for himself.
See, when I talked to him. I don't see. I could see maybe like all of them maybe voted for each other. Like maybe they all had a pact. They're like, hey, let's all just vote.
That's the same thing.
Let's just all vote for each other.
Maybe someone else from Turkey voted for Furkan.
That's also true. Maybe another Turkish
player. They really like his shooting.
Yeah, that's true. He's a favorite amongst his teammates too. They really love that kid.
They do. They really do.
And he's
like
fun.
Him.
He's a fun. Fun.
Enjoys the game.
It's cool to see him play well because he is fun. He is a lot of fun.
Glad you finished that sentence.
Yeah. He's a lot of fun.
It's good to see him play well. It's just good to see him play. That's not what we're looking for.
Look, play well. Hit shots. Need him to make those shots.
He's done it.
Need him to keep on doing that. Dreams come into reach at Wilmington University. WilmU helps working adults reach their career goals through accredited and affordable degrees and certificates. To reach new heights in your field, WilmU works. Find out why at wilmu.edu. So, Amy, I want to end this talking about, you know, the obviously the biggest news of the NBA. And, you know, I think it's pretty fair to say one of the biggest news sports moments, you know, ever.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant tragically passing in a helicopter crash, 41 years old with his 13-year-old daughter, Gianna. You guys did such an amazing job last night on the air going through it. I texted you because I know that must have been just so tough to get through. Serena Winters, who obviously covered Kobe, she gave her stories. And you just, you know, and talking to her, you just feel the emotion with her. And then Mark Jackson as well, who obviously, you know, basically grew up with Kobe in the area and, you know, knew him. I think he described him, you know, getting off the plane as a 12-year-old kid from Italy. So it's just, and you know, it's so sad, but to just, you know, reflect on his career and you know, how great he was of a basketball player and how much, you know, the legacy is obviously complicated for a number of reasons, especially with Philadelphia and, you know, everything there. So just from your perspective, when, you know, what are your, maybe just like your biggest memories or just something about Kobe that just really sticks out?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those seminal moments that unfortunately you will probably remember where you were. And we were talking last night and Michael Barkan asked me, he's like, when do the players move on from this? When can the season move on? And they won't this season. This season will be marred and it'll be looked back at as that's the year that we lost Kobe Bryant. And that's going to be really hard. It's hard for these players. You know, when you're growing up, that was their guy, the Bean. Yeah. And when I moved here 11 years ago, you know, that's what I knew about Philadelphia. Like, you knew, oh, that's Lower Merion. That's where Kobe Bryant is from. And it's interesting in talking with, you know, different people. My husband, Sean, grew up watching him. He literally would travel around to his high school basketball games. And he's not the only one. These gyms would sell out 4,000 and you'd have to get tickets. You know, he was talking about how a game he went to, it was one of the semifinals and it was a Coatesville game and it was at the Palestra. And then he went to another game. It was in the pavilion out in Villanova. And he said, we got there 2.5 hours early to make sure for a high school game. But that's the level. And he said, you know, he grew up watching these guys and that was always his guy. And talking with him yesterday, he was like, you know, I feel weird being sad because it's not like we were best friends or even I was friendly with him. Like, yeah, I would talk to you. But I don't think people should feel bad for feeling sad about a guy that they may or may not have known. And I understand it's a hard thing, but he was so important to so many people for so many different reasons, whether it was because you were from Lower Merion or as you're from Philly, or you just really liked basketball, or you grew up a Lakers fan. Let's face it, like, the Sixers weren't that great when he first came into the league. So if you saw a guy that was from your area and he was going crazy out there in LA, maybe you became a Lakers fan, or you at least were a Kobe Bryant fan. And I think that for me, it was hard to get the news, you know, when it broke, and then you turn into your reporter mode and I'm like, I got to get to work. And then as I'm driving in, you know, I'm starting getting messages about who else was on the plane. And that's when, that's when it turned from just an absolute tragedy to an unthinkable, unfathomable, just disaster. And your mind went right to, Vanessa Bryant and the whole Bryant family, of just thinking how much they had lost, and then the other people, and listening to the stories of you know, the coaches and the young women that were on board. It's just hard. And it took me back to when Roy Halladay passed away and how tragic that was. This one was harder for a lot of different reasons, because of maybe who Kobe was to so many people. He really did transcend. When you have Neymar on the international soccer stage holding up a 24 after he scored a goal, I mean, that tells you everything that you probably need to know. It's something that affected so many people. And listening to Mark Jackson tell wonderful stories about Kobe going against him and playing against guys like Alvin Williams, and Alvin Williams being like, where's this guy go to college? Mark's like, you know, he doesn't even go to high school yet. Like, he's not even in high school yet. And you know, when he would play against the Sixers when he was in high school, and he would run Jerry Stackhouse right down the court. I mean, those are wonderful things. And it's nice to look back. It's sad to think about, when you're thinking about some of the game's greats, they're all pretty much still here. You know, Larry Bird's still with us. Bill Russell's still with us. Magic Johnson's still with us. Michael Jordan.
Charles Barkley.
They're all great. Yeah. And Kobe at 41, isn't it? That's hard. That's hard to really.
It's far too soon.
It's hard to really kind of wrap your brain around.
It is. And when I, you know, the stuff, like, at the end of his career, you know, the retirement year, the kind of the farewell tour, I thought it was, you know, one, like, say what you want about Philadelphia, and obviously the fans, you know, there's been some things that maybe they could have handled differently, whatever, what have you, but the Kobe Bryant farewell tour thing, man, they handled that perfectly.
I think so too.
Cheered him on, gave him a nice ovation when he scored, gave him a nice ovation when he left the court, handled that very well. And, you know, he's had a very complicated relationship with the fans of Philly throughout his entire career, you know, telling a guy that he was coming back in game 5 to rip their hearts out and all that stuff. But that was him. Yeah. That was just him. So, like, I respected it because it was him.
It's like, if he was for your team, you would have loved it.
Oh, if he was in Philly, please. Oh, my God. If he was a Sixer. But just, you know, the thing that, like, I'm going to choose to remember with him the most, I think, is in that retirement when he kind of softened up a little bit and showed more of his human side, smiled a little more, and then you got to see him develop his relationship with his daughter. Yeah. And, you know, take it. And, like, it was just, I think it was, like, just, like, a couple weeks ago where, like, that video went viral of him, like, just pointing stuff. Like, he took her to a WNBA game, took her to a UConn game.
She's, like, finishing his sentence when they're talking about certain, you know, elements that they're watching on the court.
So, like, it's just, and the one thing, too, that I saw, it was, you know, there's been a million stories and, like, so many wonderfully done things. But Molly Knight did a thing for The Athletic just on Gigi. Mm-hmm. And I was 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm sitting on my couch, like, crying, like, because it was just so beautiful and so sweet. And the one thing that I love is she was Kobe, like, her personality, like, she had that brashness, that bravado, like, she had it. And, like, the one thing he said, like, was in the article, Kobe was on Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, I love this.
Not that long ago. And he said, this is the quote from Kobe. He said, "The best thing that happens is when we go out and she'll be standing next to me and fans will come up to me. Like, hey, you got to have a boy. You and Vanessa got to have a boy. Somebody to carry on the legacy and the tradition." And Gigi will be like, "Oi, I got this. We don't need a boy for that. I got this."
Yeah.
And
he was a big proponent of that. He was huge proponent and supporter of women's athletics and girls basketball at every level. And then obviously also in the WNBA and then the college women's game as well.
Yeah. And that's how I'm going to kind of choose to remember. And, like, that's what it's going to most come to my mind is that. And then, you know, today we were both at practice and just a lot of really good stuff. Yeah. Tobias Harris was a guy. I mean, I've noticed that Tobias Harris wore Mamba shoes every game. I've never seen him not wear a pair of Mamba shoes. So obviously Kobe meant an awful lot to him. He talked about that today, how he got the opportunity to spend time with him this summer.
Great.
He said it was, you know, a once in a lifetime thing. And so that just, as tragic as it all is, like for Tobias, at least he got to have that experience and he'll have that with him always. So that's, to me, that was a really cool thing. Brett Brown talking about when he was here for his final game.
And he got to have that meeting.
Yeah, he sat in Brett Brown's office for 45 minutes and they talked just about like life and like what was next and just a lot of really cool stuff coming out of that. And, you know, it's
going to take a while for it to sink in really fully. And I think when they take the court, obviously, you know, for the Sixers, they're taking the court on Tuesday. The Lakers taking the court at Staples Center on Tuesday is, you know, the players that played through it on Sunday, and Al Horford spoke about that as well, and he said all credit to them. Maybe it helps them, maybe it didn't, but, you know, they did it. And I can't imagine so many of these players. Tobias said he's like, I wanted to be Kobe. They all said that. They wanted to be Kobe when they grew up. And for them to take the court knowing the person that influenced them perhaps the most is gone for such a tragic reason, is it'll be very difficult. And it'll take a long, long time until – they can probably look back and have, you know, some of those memories seem a little bit better than they do now.
And the one thing I'll say too that I'll kind of leave on this is, you know, Tobias talked about it. I believe it was you who asked him about it. Just how do you do it? Like how do you get back on the court? How do you do it? And he just basically said, he almost said it was like therapy. Like this will be like therapy. Like playing the game I love. And you know, I'm sure if it was Kobe would want to, you know what I mean? Like he wouldn't, like that's part of the reason why they didn't cancel the games, is thinking like Kobe wouldn't have wanted you guys to cancel these games. And so I think that as basketball goes on and like these guys will get a chance to kind of, you know, normalcy is probably not going to be in the vocabulary for a long time with this stuff, but as close as that, as they can come. So Amy, thank you so much
for
joining us. You know, Danny will be back next week. We'll probably have another fun guest star, or maybe it'll be Amy again. Who knows? I don't know.
I just walk around and I wander in and they let me talk.
Yeah. So thank you again so much, guys, for joining us. This has been the Sixers Talk Podcast presented by Wilmington University, WilmU Works. We will talk to you next time.